This is Caps PA announcer Wes Johnson, and you're listening to For the Pod.
Welcome to a brand new edition of What the Puck. It is a Washington Capitals podcast. Thank you for listening to us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, the Baltimore Sports Report Network, Player.fm, Overcast, Google Play Music, and Satchel. The Caps are done playing hockey. They're going all over the world. Some of them are going to the World Championship. Some of them are putting their dogs in a onesie and heading out to Russia. Joining me right now is Coach Dan. What's going on, man?
Not too much. How you doing?
I'm doing good. So to let everyone know what's going on this episode, we're going to have special guest Ryan Drury from Hockey Talk with Ryan Drury to discuss the end of the Caps season, as well as enjoy our annual end of the season awards and our annual What the Puckies. You have any?
It's going to be good.
It's going to be good. It's the first time the What the Puckies have had three people. And
special guest.
Do you think there's going to be any, like, jaw-dropping moments? You know, like, I don't know. Like, what's happened at big award shows? Like, is there going to be, like, a moonlight thing? You know, a La La Land moonlight thing type of thing?
I think it's possible.
All right, so let's just jump right into it. No time to waste. Let's talk about the World Championship. The Caps staying busy. Some of them still playing hockey. We have to congratulate Nick Backstrom. He is a gold medalist from the World Championship with Team Sweden. They were able to beat Canada in a shootout. And not only a shootout, Nick Backstrom's game-winning goal in that shootout. Congrats to him. That was did you see any of that game?
No, because it's boring. And after the Caps get knocked, it's not boring. But after the Caps get knocked out, you're just like, oh, I don't want to watch anymore. And it's kind of lame. It came down to a shootout, and it's great for the players that they got a medal and everything. But it's not how they want to wrap up their season.
Yeah, but so Nick Backstrom, he's a gold medalist. Bronze medalist, we have Dmitry Orlov and Yevgeny Kuznetsov. Their game against Canada, I watched a little bit of that. That was like going through the Caps loss all over again, because the Russian team was up, I think it was like 2-1 or 3-1 or something like that. And within 2 minutes, Canada came back, got two goals immediately. And you could see, like, you know, Russia just slowly, like, lose everything that they were fighting for and give up. Kind of, we've seen that all before. Maybe it's like a Russian thing that we didn't know about.
Nice, man.
I don't know. Maybe it is. We've seen it with the Caps. Now we're seeing it with Team Russia as well. They fully had that game in hand, and then Canada gets a goal, and Russia kind of just gives up.
Yeah, it's a high-profile game, and you have to wonder about the mindset of the players. And how many of those guys really sort of want to be there? And that's not to say that they don't want to be there necessarily, but it's not where a lot of these guys want to be. They want to be playing in the playoffs, and they're not there, and it's got to be frustrating to some extent.
Yeah. But, hey, Kuzi and Orly both are bronze medalists at the World Championship. That's at least something. Can't go wrong with that. And then we have to say, as we can say it for now, Philip Grubauer, back up Caps goalie for the moment. He was named player of the game for Germany versus Canada for his team. I think he got a very nice Rolex watch or some sort of watch. I don't know what kind.
He's going to really enjoy Vegas.
He's going to hawk that on the Vegas Strip.
not the point I was making, but yes, he certainly has the possibility of doing it.
So Caps still getting a couple medals, not the trophy they want, but still they're getting a couple medals and everything. So they're staying busy, but let's talk about, there's a couple key dates coming up for the Washington Capitals and the entire NHL. June 1st, which is coming up in just a couple days, is when you have to put in the who you're saving from the Vegas draft. So do you have any idea of who they might be saving? I mean, I'm Ovi, Backe being two names that are obvious.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's a pretty odd. I have to go look at the roster again to remember all the people that I put down or a couple other ones. But I have to imagine that it's Ovechkin, Backstrom. Wait, hold on. Let me bring out the roster before I go crazy and start throwing names out there. I mean, I have to imagine, and you have to anticipate that they're going to be re-signing Kuznetsov, Burakovsky, Orlov, those kind of guys. So I have to imagine it's going to be Ovechkin, Backstrom, Burakovsky, Kuznetsov, Johansson. Who was it?
I'm sorry.
Eller and Beagle. Wilson.
Well, June 1st is the reserve list. June 17th is the protected list for the Vegas draft. So I'm sorry I got that wrong. It's a little bit later, but still just as important in June.
Yeah, I mean, the forward thing's a little bit interesting in terms of will they protect two out of these upcoming three in Eller, Wilson, and Beagle. My guess is Beagle is the one that's left exposed.
Okay. Later on in June, the 22nd, 23rd, 24th, the schedule will be released, and the NHL draft is happening that weekend, so that is a big deal there. But the Caps really don't have anyone. They don't have any picks.
That's a problem. They don't have picks until the fourth round.
Yeah, so we're kind of stuck there. And then June 26th, the Caps are allowed to send out some qualifying offers to restricted free agents. Right after the draft, the Caps will hold their annual development camp June 26th through July 1st. And then July 1st will be the free agency beginning. So this is really a busy time for the front office of the Caps. So the players might not be on the ice, but they're still working pretty hard to get everything going going the way they want.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's going to be an interesting offseason for this team.
Yeah, because this team has a lot of question marks, and we'll cover that with Ryan later on in the show. But this is going to be a very busy offseason for Brian McClellan. And did you notice there's no Caps Fan Fest announced yet for this summer? So usually they announce that with the development camp.
We still have time for you to get mad.
You know I will. All right, so that's pretty much it for Caps news, I think. So let's take a quick break. It's the off season. What can you do? I mean, Caps are still making a little bit of news, but pretty easy to say, hey, congrats on that medal. Also, World Championship greater than the World Cup. Sorry, it's true. All right, so that is it for Caps World with just us. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with Ryan Drury from Hockey Talk with Ryan Drury. We're going to discuss the end of the Caps season and what went wrong. So stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Thank you so much for listening to What the Puck. Joining us on this episode, helping us in this off season while we watch other teams play hockey, is the host of Hockey Talk with Ryan Drury. And you know who that is, Ryan Drury. What's up, man?
Hey, guys. I'm doing really well. How are you guys?
You know what? The Caps aren't playing, so we're both kind of bored, I got to say. You know, it's different. But before we started talking on air, you know, Coach Dan and I both were just talking about it. You're clean shaven. We're clean shaven. It's a sad time to be a dude right now.
I don't know if I'm clean shaven anymore. I got some good stubble going.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it took you like 6 days.
It takes a while.
All right, Ryan, let's jump right into it. You know what Coach Dan and I thought of the end of this season, and you're pretty vocal on Twitter. You are a pretty angry Canadian when it comes to this team. So tell us, where do you think it all fell apart for the Caps this year?
Wait, hang on. Let me turn my volume down real quick. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, yeah, obviously I've calmed down a little bit, and yeah, I am pretty vocal on Twitter, like you said. I mean, I've been watching this team since I was a little boy, and you know, watched it through all the rough times. I mean, we talked about this last time I was on, and obviously been here for some of the better times, I guess we could call it. I mean, there have been lots of good times, not overly great. I mean, when you weigh the expectations of what a lot of people think of this team against what they've done in the grand scope of things, it really hasn't been that impressive. I mean, you can look at the back-to-back President's Trophies and kind of go, okay, you know, they're obviously a good team. Like, everybody knows that. It's pretty evident. But my opinion of the season, I mean, I don't know how anybody could, you know, watch this team throughout the last 5+ years and say that this year is anything but a failure. It was a complete breakdown again of, you know, this team and a lot of the players saying it after the loss to Pittsburgh. They have this mental gap that they can't seem to hurdle over. And I think that a lot of the things that went wrong last year were the same things that went wrong this year. I remember talking with you guys at the end of last season against the Penguins again and saying that, you know, our depth scoring really let us down. I mean, when you look at our top end players, as much heat as Ovechkin is taking right now, which, I mean, some of it is warranted, but I mean, I think most of us saw the injury that he had and the brutal bruise on his leg from that little exchange with Nazem Kadri, which I had some opinions about. You look at Nick Backstrom, I thought that in the latter half, it took him a while to get going in the Pittsburgh series, but in the last few games of it, he was the Capitals' best player. He was excellent. And I just think that the depth scoring, I mean, when you look at a guy, I mentioned it last year, a guy like Andrei Burakovsky, who we know has all the skill in the world, he didn't score until the last three games of the Pittsburgh series. I mean, he was a ghost in the Toronto series. We didn't get very much out of Lars Eller, who we gave up 2 second-round picks for. Now, I don't really have a huge problem with the price we paid, but based on, you know, when you look at Pittsburgh and all of these guys that they seem to have on their roster that just show up, and when Sid or Malkin or Kessel are having a rough night, there's this Gensel kid, then there's Connor Sheary, Brian Rust, this Scott Wilson guy. Like, there are a couple guys on their team this year who weren't even on the cup-winning squad last year that are pumping goals in. Gensel wasn't on the team last year. And when you look at the comparison of, okay, well, their star players are playing well, our star players are playing pretty well, but then as you get deeper in the lineup, our stats start to disappear in comparison to their depth guys. And I also didn't think that offensively our defensemen played really well. We didn't get any support in terms of John Carlson or Matt Niskanen. They played very well defensively, I thought. But when you compare it to other teams in the playoffs, like you look at what Erik Karlsson and Dion Phaneuf are doing right now for Ottawa, Justin Schultz for the Penguins, who was a castaway from Edmonton, I just think that the depth of our offense wasn't there again. And when that happens, other teams can just key in on Ovi, they can key in on Backstrom, and they can shut them down. And when no one's there to help answer the bell, I mean, it's, you know, it's pretty easy to point at that and say, well, that's a pretty glaring hole.
Yeah, you covered a lot of bases there, and I completely agree with a lot of the things you're saying, but I do want to go back to the mental part of the game that you brought up at the beginning. We all are saying it, that there's this mental block about the playoffs, and I think this team proved it's not just the Penguins. It definitely gets worse with the Penguins, but they came in to that Toronto series, and it looked like things were going to fall apart right at the very beginning of the opening round. So I don't know if you – is that something you can blame on the players or on a coach, this mental challenge that they have against against the playoffs? Is that – or is that something that they just kind of have to get over? Like, I don't know how you cure that.
Yeah, well, and I mean, that's a great point. And I think that that's the aspect of this that is most frustrating, at least for me. When you hear guys like Ovechkin or Oshie, I think Niskanen had a couple of similar comments after that game seven going, yeah, we just didn't have the intensity that we needed tonight. We, you know, we're missing this. And I look at that comment and I'm like, but it's game seven, guys. And in the game prior, you kicked the crap out of Pittsburgh on their home ice. Like, the Capitals destroyed the Penguins in Game 6. It was a slaughter. It's the best playoff game they've played probably in the Ovechkin era, and Ovechkin almost had nothing to do with it, really. Nicklas Backstrom was a monster in that game. And then you come home for Game 7, and after a loss like that, you're hearing guys go, ah, well, you know, we were missing that intensity. We're missing this. It's like, well, how is that possible? You had them on the ropes, you know, I think most people would say, after Games 5 and 6. I don't know how much blame you can really put on the coaching staff in terms of this mental block, because a lot of the players that are still here have been here long before Barry Trotz showed up and before Todd Reirden showed up and what have you. I mean, there are guys on this team that know how to win. I mean, Nicklas Backstrom just won a gold medal with Sweden at the Worlds, and I was really happy for him. I mean, you know, there are few guys in the hockey world that deserve to celebrate a championship quite like Nick Backstrom. You know, Justin Williams, that's a big reason they brought him into this team. Mr. Game 7, I know he hates that nickname, but this is a guy who's done it. He's got three Stanley Cups, and, you know, Brooks Orpik's a Stanley Cup winner. There are guys on this team that know how to be vocal. They know how to lead and do things by example. I think TJ Oshie's established himself as another one of those guys. But as a team, it seems to me that when you watch the Capitals get into difficult situations, like when Marc-Andre Fleury would frustrate them, they were burying rebounds right into his chest, it just seems like they get a puck on their stick and think, if I don't score here, it's going to be a problem. And that messes with them a little bit. And then as more and more pucks miss the net or a Pittsburgh Penguin block them, the frustration seems to mount to a point where they'll get a good scoring chance. I can't count the amount of times in both series where the Caps would get a two-on-one or an odd man break and a guy would have a great shooting lane and he would try and make that nifty pass, which is – it's really frustrating because in the playoffs, I mean, you want to get in a goalie's face, shoot it low, try and get a rebound and cause problems for that second save. Or you never know. I mean, we saw Nicklas Backstrom do it. He scored a clean wrist shot right under the glove of Marc-Andre Fleury in game six. They pass up opportunities to shoot the puck so much, and they have so many good shooters on the team. It's pretty frustrating. And then when they try and go back to doing that, it's almost too late. And everybody just seems to catch this pneumonia almost of, I'm so nervous right now. And, you know, and they said as much after the game. And, yeah, I mean, I think that that's the most frustrating aspect of this.
So you said that it's not really on this coaching staff in particular regarding the mental gap that this team seems to be unable to overcome. And I think when we say this team, we're talking about this core group of players. Who is responsible for sort of fixing this mental problem that they consistently are having?
Well, I think Barry Trotz and his staff are obviously a key part of that. You know, it's funny. I remember talking to a couple of my friends after the loss. I think I even might have said it to you, Dan. And I was really frustrated with Barry Trotz because I thought that in the Toronto series, and I said it on my show Hockey Talk here in Ontario, that I thought that there were times where Mike Babcock really outcoached him just in terms of managing matchups, special teams. I mean, there were times where the Toronto Maple Leafs were really frustrating Washington, especially in their own zone with their speed. I don't feel like Washington did a good job of adjusting to things like that. And it happened in the Pittsburgh series too. There were times where Mike Sullivan, you know, had Barry Trotz in his back pocket, in my opinion, outside of games 5 and 6. I thought, you know, Barry Trotz had the lines rolling really well. He was frustrating Pittsburgh's best players with his best players. But yeah, I mean, some of this has to fall on Barry Trotz in terms of trying to get this team to not panic when they get into that dire do or die game 7. I mean, they were on the brink of elimination twice in this series against Pittsburgh. They played their two best games of the playoffs in response. And then when it came to that penultimate moment, where, you know, great players can write their legacy, it seems like they run into that mental wall. And yeah, I think Barry Trotz needs to do a job next year of when they get into this situation, assuming, of course, they make the playoffs, which I think they will. It would be ridiculous for them to miss the playoffs after the two regular seasons they had. When they get to that moment, it does need to fall on the coaching staff to prepare these guys. I don't think that this is a strategy issue, if you will. It is literally a mental issue. We know that the Capitals can play and suffocate the best teams in the league. It comes down to a mentality, and they need to be better prepared when they get in these situations.
It really shocks me to know that the Caps are having such a mental block about the playoffs and about these issues in the postseason. And I mean, I understand because they've been there before and they don't want to, you know, look foolish again. But Barry Trotz, he seems like the type of guy and the type of coach that wants you – he does all those, like, extra field trips when the Caps have days off. You know, he went to Annapolis to show off the Naval Academy. They had a dart tournament in New York City. He always seems to, like, he's trying to get the guys to not take the game as seriously as I guess, during the regular season as they should. So it really surprises me that he can't apply that same type of vision that he does in the regular season to the postseason. And my biggest worry with him is, you know, we haven't heard from Brian McClellan, the general manager, yet since the end of the season. So do you think Barry Trotz's days are kind of numbered in D.C.? Is that why we haven't heard from the general manager? Or do you think that he's still going to be here next season?
I had said to some of my friends that I didn't want to watch if Trotz was coaching again next year. Obviously that was kind of in the heat of the moment, but I was really upset with the way that he utilized some of the players like Andrei Burakovsky. He wasn't going out of his way to play particularly well when he was on the third line, but you know, that's a problem when you've got a kid that talented. You know, I feel like he waited too long in a situation like that as an example to shake things up. And then all of a sudden he gets, you know, on Nicklas Backstrom's left wing, 2 goals. Wow, amazing. So, I mean, there are aspects of the way Barry Trotz coached the team in the playoffs that frustrated me. However, I think that based on the players that we still have, at the amount of elite positions that we still have, I think that it would be an overreaction to not let Barry Trotz come back after winning 2 straight President's Trophies to have another crack at this group with just a mildly different approach and a different roster setup, which is going to be inevitable based on their salary cap situation. I think we're all aware that Kevin Shattenkirk's certainly not coming back. And I mean, in my opinion, I like the guy. I think he's a pretty good player, but good riddance in terms of being a Capital, because I thought that outside of Game 3, when he scored the overtime winner, he contributed nothing. And I thought that he was very bad defensively as well. That aside, though, in terms of Barry Trotz, I think Brian McClellan not saying anything yet speaks volumes about how frustrated and how deep that frustration runs in the organization. Because if there's one person that you can't blame for this failure, it's certainly Brian McClellan. I think Brian McClellan did nothing short of an excellent job putting together a championship caliber roster. Now, people that are fans of other teams might snicker at that and say, well, I mean, how many guys have won a cup on the team? But in terms of making a well-rounded machine that was definitely capable of winning a Stanley Cup, Brian McClellan checked off all the boxes. He's been part of the Capitals front office for a long time under George McPhee before he was let go. He's been part of the scouting staff that gave us picks like Mike Green very late in the first round. They unearthed Braden Holtby. They took Kuznetsov very late. John Carlson, all the way down the list. He's been there for all of it. So the blame for me certainly doesn't fall on the front office. But, I mean, in short, to answer your question, I think Barry Trotz will still be the head coach of the Capitals.
Now, I agree with your point about Brian McClellan, but I find it interesting regarding Trotz, because it's not like next season he's going to have the same roster. It's going to look maybe not dramatically, maybe being a little over, not to use the same word again, but dramatic. But it's definitely a team that's going to have a decent amount of different players, and these are players that are unproven. So is it fair to say that Trotz's next season is his last one if the team, at least on paper, is not as good? If they don't, I mean, it's his last one if they don't, you know, make it further, at least further into the playoffs.
Probably. I mean, I think that that is a much safer thing to say than saying that he won't be the coach this next coming season. I think that if this team cannot find a way to significantly improve on their playoff performance, and I don't just mean in terms of advancing further to, say, an Eastern Conference final or preferably a Stanley Cup, I mean in terms of how they play early on in the playoffs. I mean, look, let's give the Toronto Maple Leafs the credit they deserve. They have an unbelievable young group of talented players that are skilled. They can score with the best. They were the 3rd best offense in the NHL this year. I mean, give them their due credit. Auston Matthews is an incredible player. I certainly didn't have him scoring 40 goals. That all being said, though, when you look at the quality of their defensive core and the quality top to bottom of what the Capitals brought offensively all season long, there is no good defendable reason why the Capitals should have gone 5+ games against that team. I mean, again, the Maple Leafs played really well, and they've got arguably the best coach in the league. That's very arguable. Mike Babcock has won at every single level he's coached at, every single one. That being said, though, when you look at the team that the Capitals came in with and the team that the Leafs came in with, I mean, I don't want to say it was embarrassing, but it was bordering on extremely frustrating that they had to go 6 games with the Leafs, and they did that last year with the Flyers too. I mean, they had them down 3-0, and Michael Neuwirth comes in and, you know, stops 45 shots. I mean, it's ridiculous. The Capitals need to improve on what they do in the early part of the playoffs to propel them further and not think we have to do all this extra work just to get to round 2.
So is the problem the coaching staff, or is the problem the core group of players?
I don't think it's the core group of players if you're referring to the same group I'm thinking of, which is Alexander Ovechkin, Nicklas Backstrom, Braden Holtby. You probably throw John Carlson in there as well. Yevgeny Kuznetsov at this point also has to be part of that core. If you want to throw 5 players,
I would agree.
Down. Matt Niskanen could probably be included in that group as well based on the way he's played since becoming a Capital. But in terms of those 5 core guys, that's your group. I don't think there's a problem with those players in terms of the way they play the game, the amount of skill they bring, and their chemistry between those 5 guys. And I certainly don't think that this is a Braden Holtby problem. Did he have his best playoffs? No, certainly not. He was pretty shaky at times, but I was willing to give him a pass on some of the Toronto goals. I mean, look at how many of them went off guys' feet. I mean, you know, that's difficult. I didn't think the Caps defenders did a very good job of clearing out the front of the net to let him see shots. Irregardless of that, though, I don't think that this is a core problem. I think that this is, like I said, a supplementary depth scoring problem where there is a dry patch that always seems to come up in terms of the players in the bottom 6. You could even say the top 9, where if certain guys aren't scoring, there's no reliable source of talent that can put pucks in the net. Because even if you look at our bottom 6, I mean, even when Andrei Burakovsky was part of that on Eller's line, I mean, Lars Eller barely flirts with 50 points as career highs. I mean, what were you really expecting from a guy in terms of, you know, flooding offense? And is he a good two-way player? Yeah, sure he is, of course. And he's a useful player. He skates very well. He finishes his checks. But is he a scary offensive threat or has a great shot? No, certainly not. Tom Wilson, I mean, he had a great start to the playoffs, but I mean, is he a guy that comes down the ice and scares a goaltender? Definitely not. And then when you get into the bottom pair where things really start to slow down in terms of, you know, that speed element that everybody seems to like on the wings, I mean, what do you want from Daniel Winnick in terms of scoring goals? I think he's a tremendous human being. He works really hard, but he's not a goal-scoring threat either. Neither is Jay Beagle, who I love. He's one of my favorite Capitals maybe ever. I mean, everyone loves his work ethic. But again, I mean, he's not a guy that you can count on for, you know, 8-9 playoff points. So I think
he was a guy that also disappeared in this playoffs. You know, he was the guy who won faceoffs. I mean, that was his thing, and that's why everybody loved him. And he even disappeared this playoff season.
I mean, he had 0 points in 13 games. It was a -5. And this is coming from a guy – I'm not a big plus-minus statistics guy, but it's interesting, a guy who's supposed to be winning the faceoffs and playing well in the defensive zone against another team's top line, and he was incapable of doing that. No, I agree with you completely that it is – and Brandon and I have talked about this on the show before, that it is the bottom 6 group of players that don't step up. And like you said before, we saw this from the Penguins. We saw it from the Penguins last year. We've seen it from the Islanders and the Flyers and a lot of the good teams where when the core group of players or top 6 are not stepping up, it's up to the other guys to do something. And they weren't doing it for this team, and they haven't been doing it for a long time.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
And then I mean, does that come back on McClellan then and in the past McPhee?
I mean, McPhee probably more so than McClellan. I mean, McClellan targeted areas, and I mean, look, the reason I say McClellan is bereft of blame here is because, yeah, those players didn't perform particularly well, but in the salary cap era, I mean, it is so hard to go out and acquire outside talent to supplement your team with. You look at a lot of these teams, like, you know, the Chicago Blackhawks. I mean, we all see what they've done over the last 5-6 years. A lot of those supplemental support players were either brought in as free agents for very cheap, veteran guys. I think back to their first cup when they brought in a guy like Thomas Kopechky. I mean, Thomas Kopechky is not exactly, you know, ever considered a star player, but he was a good supplemental fourth liner who had some skill and could put a puck in every now and again. Whereas some of the guys that have appeared on some of these Capitals rosters, you can't say that about. Sure, you could maybe say that they were hard workers, but hard work only gets you so far. I mean, you do need a little bit of skill, especially with the way the game's going now. So, I mean, Brian McClellan did his best to bring in players. He definitely improved the roster. I just think that, you know, in terms of the skill level in chipping in offense, I mean, the Ottawa Senators, I mean, you look at the guys that have played on their fourth line. Jean-Gabriel Pageau scored 4 goals against the New York Rangers in a game. I mean, like, look at that guy. Like, he's the tiniest player probably playing in the playoffs right now. He's maybe all of 5'8". But he's quick.
Hey, that's like my height.
Yeah, well, there's nothing wrong with that. Some of my favorite players in the league right now are well under 6 feet. I think the world of Johnny Gaudreau. He's one of my favorite players. But even some of those Leaf guys like Mitch Marner and William Nylander, they're not very big guys. But what they are is they're quick. They have some skill, and they can put a puck in the net. You know what I mean? And they have a diversity in their offensive skill. It's not just crash and bang. I can go to the front of the net and cause problems. It's I can blow to the outside and get around your third pairing defenseman. I can be a threat on the power play. If somebody finds me in open space, I have a good wrist shot. It's not a one-dimensional approach to their skill. Whereas you look at a guy like Jay Beagle, who I don't mean to pick on him, and I hope it doesn't sound like I am because I think the world of the guy, but he does not have a diverse set of skills. He's a good defensive player who works hard and occasionally can get a greasy goal here and there. But when you look at a guy who's doing depth scoring for a team like Ottawa, like J.G. Pageau, it's just not the same.
All right, so what do you think this team looks like next season?
Well, I mean, I think it's going to be very different. Obviously, I think the defense core will probably go through quite a few makeovers. Obviously, I think that Carlson and Niskanen are you can't move those guys. They're integral. And the Caps are odd in that way where they're not one of these teams that have, like, that stud defenseman. I don't even think they have any defensemen that are probably in the top 15 in the league. In terms of well-roundedness, but what they do have is a few guys who together can provide really solid I mean, this is the number one defensive team in the year in the league this year, pardon me, and something has to be said for that, right? Orlov will be back, I'm sure. I'd be shocked if they didn't bring him back, which is surprising because I remember saying to you guys last year I wasn't very impressed with him, and I'll bring him up later in our awards section. But
spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert. But I think that Madison Bowie has earned a call-up. Now, I know people are, you know, were a little concerned earlier in the year when he had that unfortunate Instagram post. But, I mean, like, he's a kid, and does it make him a worse hockey player? No. He made a mistake. He knows he made a mistake. And I've liked him since watching him in the WHL. I thought he was a fantastic defenseman, and I thought that the Capitals, frankly, got a steal with him in the second round, and I think that his play in the NHL will yield that in a couple years. Obviously, a guy who has an outside shot, Connor Hobbs, a Regina Pats defenseman that they drafted. He has a big shot. He's not afraid to use his size. I mean, we've had big defensemen here before, like Jeff Schultz, 6'7", and he wouldn't use an inch of it, which was frustrating. This kid's completely different, and he's got a big shot. I like him a lot.
Can he skate unlike Schultz?
Yeah, he can move pretty well.
It's a good upside. It's a good, all right. Yeah, he's already better than Schultz.
He can move pretty well. He's not the fastest guy in the world, but he can certainly move. And then in terms of forwards, I mean, that's where it gets really interesting. I think obviously it's pretty evident that based on salary cap restrictions, we'll see what happens with TJ Oshie. I would love to have him back. I think that he deserves to be a Capital. Obviously, Evgeny Kuznetsov is the number one priority. I think that he's probably going to be looking at a salary anywhere from $6 to $7 million. I don't think he'll get that, though. They will not pay him more than Nicklas Backstrom. So I think you could expect that he'll settle in somewhere around the six range. But Jakub Vrána will be a part of this team next year. I thought in spurts he looked really, really good, and he'll be ready. I thought he played dynamite for Hershey. He was one of the best AHL players.
Where is he going to play, though?
He'll probably play in the same spot that we saw Burakovsky in for a large majority of it. I mean, Lars Eller is going to be back. He's got 1 year left on his deal, if I'm not mistaken, and he'll probably saddle up with him. Or is Eller free agent, actually?
They have him. I'm looking it up right now, but yeah. I think they have him for at least another year. But the concern about putting him with Eller is that we saw this with Burakovsky, that if Burakovsky's on a line with guys who are not offensive-minded, or maybe they are and they're just not good at it, that Eller's free agent after next season, that they will – whatever player is there that's expected to score goals is going to struggle. And Burakovsky was struggling this season and was unable to put up a quality point totals because his – not part of it may have been him, but it was also his line mates were not helping him out. Will we see the same thing next year with Vrána, and will that help his production and improvements as a hockey player if he's on a line with guys that are not going to provide him with the offensive opportunities that he needs?
Maybe, and that's definitely a concern, but I think that when you mix in potentially bumping Wilson back down to the fourth line, and then, you know, there are other guys that are going to get a shout here. I mean, Riley Barber has played really well, and he is similar to Vrána in the fact that they're both very fast. They're quick, and they have skill, and they have good shots from the outside, and they're threats on the power play for the Hershey Bears. They're very good players. So I think that if potentially you have a mix there where one of those guys obviously pops in for the potentially departing Justin Williams. I don't think Justin Williams will be back unless he took a significant salary cut. But I can't see that happening. But then you plug a guy like Barber in potentially. Maybe even a guy like Nate Walker gets a shout and plays a couple games here and there. He's a good player. I like him a lot. But when you factor that in and those players give a bit of a different look, because even Andrei Burakovsky, he's a skilled player. He's not the fastest guy. And even when he was drafted, that was one thing that kind of held him back a little bit. People kind of raised an eyebrow, and I did very well in the year that he spent on Connor McDavid's wing in the OHL.
We've heard about other guys that were slow. Sorry.
Yeah.
We've heard about other guys that are a little slow of foot, and we saw how that's worked out well for the Caps in the past when they've traded them away.
That's what I mean. And when you factor in a guy like Vrána, who is really fast, I actually think he might well have been the fastest player in the AHL. Like, he can turn the jets on when he gets to the outside and gets those first three strides going. Even if he plays with a guy like Lars Eller, and, you know, Vrána, it'll take some growing pains. He's only played 21 NHL games. But all a centerman needs to do for him, and watch him play in Hershey. He's not playing with elite-level players, maybe at the AHL level, but watch him in Hershey. If a centerman or a defenseman can find him exiting the zone when they get possession in their defensive zone and find him in stride, he doesn't need somebody to set him up. He is gone. He will leave people behind. And if he's out there on the third line with the Caps, probably playing against teams' second or third defensive pairs, where the talent level drops off on any team, he could be dangerous. I'm not expecting the kid to score 25 goals, but I think that he has the talent and potential to probably pot maybe 15. He'll get some power play time. You know, in terms of being up front, I think that him and Barber have a really, really good chance.
That's very interesting, because what we've seen in the past with Brian McClellan is that he was going for those guys that already had cups, that we saw him bring in Justin Williams and Brooks Orpik and all these guys that have all that experience. So what you're saying is, I mean, the Caps are kind of forced now to go younger and get those rookies and the guys that don't have that much experience due to the salary cap. But in the long run, is that a good thing for this Capitals team moving forward? Because we've seen what a lot of these players can do, like you said, in the AHL. And maybe this is their time. Maybe it's their time to come up and prove that they can be at that NHL level.
Like you said, Brandon, I think it has to be. I mean, they're in the hold of the boa constrictor right now, if you will, the Capitals. They are pinched by the salary cap. And, you know, there are rumors. I mean, we talked with Sportsnet Friedman on my show about a month ago, and he said there are rumors that maybe the cap goes up around 1.8 to 2 million. But I mean, you know, that doesn't give you a ton of new wiggle room to bring in, you know, veteran free agents. And the free agent pool this year in general isn't even really that good. Kevin Shattenkirk is the top of the pile, and I don't know if he cost himself quite a bit of money with his play. I would think so, but somebody will probably still give him $6.5 million.
Rangers will be just like, here's our checkbook.
Yeah, enjoy. The Rangers, maybe Boston, you know, you never know. That they're going to need some defensive help, although I really like some of their young defensemen. But no, I just think that, the Caps are kind of forced to do this, and I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing based on the results. They've not done anything with the current setup, so maybe it's time to go a little younger and faster. That's what's beating them. So if you can't beat them, join them, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's what they're going to have to do, like you said, with the salary cap in terms of where it may end up. But if there's one surprise player that you feel the Caps are going to bring back, or maybe this isn't the best way to ask that question, but one player you feel like the Caps are definitely unrestricted free agent that you think the Caps are definitely going to bring back between Williams, Winnick, Oshie, Alsner, and Shattenkirk, who do you think it's going to be?
I would say Alsner, but I just don't know how they're going to be able to afford him. So I'll say Dan Winnick, simply because that would be surprising to have him back. But I think that, you know, I think that Barry Trotz and the coaching staff, particularly Todd Reirden on special teams, like what he offers as a penalty killer. So, you know, if he comes back for, you know, under $1 million, you know, maybe you can squeeze him in, especially if the cap does rise that extra little bit and they're sitting there after signing all the important guys. And I don't mean to say Daniel Winnick's not, you know, couldn't potentially be an important piece. You know what I mean, though. I mean, there are more crucial guys on the list here. But if they're done signing everybody who's, you know, the really crucial key pieces, and then they're sitting there with them with some room and say, hey, would you like to come back? Familiarity, we know what you offer us. Yeah, I could see him potentially coming back.
So Brandon and I have been going back and forth about this for, I'd say, probably most of this season. TJ Oshie, is he coming back, yes or no?
Yes.
Ah!
I know what people are writing. It's the hottest topic, it seems, in Washington right now. What's he going to cost? Can they afford him? Should they bring him back? Well, you know, I can answer the last question with a definitive yes. They should bring him back. He has made it clear that he loves Washington. He loves this team. He is the best winger that Nicklas Backstrom and Alexander Ovechkin have ever played with. You know, there were those years where Mike Knuble was, you know, crashing the net and, you know, banging in 20-odd goals here and there, and he was a very good player. But in terms of sheer skill and supplementing that, I almost equate it, like, not in terms of overall production, because this line was really potent, but do you guys remember back in, you know, like 07, 08 when the Senators were a juggernaut and they had Spezza, Heatley, Alfredson, back when Danny Heatley could score goals and play in the NHL? That line was unbelievable. And now the Caps almost have a similar type of setup. Oshie, Ovechkin, Backstrom is one of the best top lines in the NHL. I would take it over most other teams' top line, hands down. So I think for that reason, if TJ Oshie wants $6 million, you got to find a way to make that work. And this guy is really, really good. And, you know, the term could potentially be scary. I mean, I would be leery if it went somewhere over 4 years. But if TJ Oshie would come back for 4 years and $5.5 to $6 million, I don't know how you could turn that away.
And if you're TJ Oshie, you also have to think about your family as well. He's got a daughter now. His daughter is, I think she's about 3 or 4. She's going to be starting school soon. You're not going to want to uproot her and your whole family if he's got to go move around somewhere again. He says he likes D.C. He likes the team. He likes the organization. I think he wants to stay, but like you've just said, it's all about the money here. It's the dollars and cents. I would love to see TJ Oshie stay here, but if you're keeping Kuznetsov, I don't know how you keep TJ Oshie as well. That's my biggest concern.
Brandon, I figured it out on Cap Friendly the other day. It's possible. You got to buy out Orpik, though.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing. And I remember seeing, I think you tweeted something about that. And I remember fiddling around with Cap Friendly too and thinking, you know, this could work. And what you just mentioned, Brandon, is interesting in that, you know, that might be a godsend for the Capitals, the fact that he's got a young family. His wife loves DC by all accounts. She's not going to want to go anywhere. And if it comes down to number crunching where the Capitals and him are, you know, $500,000 apart, maybe TJ Oshie settles for that because he likes the team so much. You know, everybody wants to get paid. They want to get their money. And he's put up some elite numbers here in terms of supplementary production with Ovechkin. Maybe that's an advantage for the Capitals. And in terms of a guy like Brooks Orpik, who I respect, I think he has had a good career. I think that he definitely brings something to the team that's useful, but man, that's one of the worst contracts in the NHL. I mean, I was nervous when they signed it, but I was open to it because I thought, well, you know what? At that point in this current group, they needed some major overhauling on the blue line, and he's provided some good I mean, he was plus 30 this year, and I know plus minus is a very finicky stat that you can't put a ton into, but I mean, it is what it is. It's, you look at his stat sheet, it's plus 30, and but that contract just does not warrant the amount. I actually have a disgusting stat for you guys. It's upsetting when you look at it. So I mean, Brooks Orpik makes $5.5 million, and for that $5.5 million, the Capitals got 14 assists plus 32, pardon me, and some hits. You know, he's a physical player. When you look at other defensemen that are earning roughly that salary, I mean, it's a laundry list of unbelievable players. Hampus Lindholm, Morgan Riley, Travis Hamonic, he only makes 3.8. That's ridiculous. Justin Falk, Dustin Byfuglien.
He's getting mad over here.
It's incredible. Ryan McDonagh, TJ Brody, Seth Jones, and I also have Rasmus Ristolainen on there, the newly signed Buffalo Sabres. Those guys all make 5.5 or less. And when you look at those numbers I just rattled off for Brooks Orpik, he's never been an offensive dynamo. But in the new NHL where, you know, defensemen, look at the Nashville Predators. They've gotten to the Stanley Cup final with a top four that's not big, not overly physical, but they can move, and they can move the puck more importantly. And there's a lot of skill there. And when you look at Brooks Orpik, that's an old NHL contract. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's an NHL contract from 10 years ago where it was like, let's get the biggest, meanest guys to just smash guys in the teeth in front of the net, and whatever, whatever happens with the puck, who cares? Like, you know, it's an outdated way of looking at building a defense core. I understand why they signed it, but right now, man, that's a tough one to swallow when you look at it.
Orpik.
Have I depressed you?
Yeah.
I mean, I would say no because we already knew about it.
But that
it
hurts. It's
depressing to hear about all the players.
Yeah.
And you're like, great, thanks. But we knew. We knew he was signed because of the things he had done and the intangibles that he brings to the team, but not what he's doing on the ice. And you have to imagine at some point this season that I don't think McPhee, as nice as it would be for the former general manager to help out the Caps, I don't imagine he's going to pick him up
in
the draft.
Not at all. No. If George McPhee doesn't take Philip Grubauer, he's an idiot. Like,
I mean, that's Philip what I'm Grubauer expecting to say.
Has to be the guy. Has to be the guy. Did you see the way he played for Germany at the Worlds?
That was insane.
They almost beat Canada because of him. He put in an all-time world championship performance. He was amazing. If he's not the pick from the Caps, I don't know what McPhee's doing. He drafted him, remember. And Dave Pryor, who has joined George McPhee as the goaltending coach, you'll remember him from back in the day. He was the Capitals goalie coach for a very long time. He turned Olli Kolzig into a Vezina winner. I actually work on the Guelph Storm broadcast with Dave's son. Trevor is the host of Guelph Storm Hockey, and Dave is a very smart guy, and he saw something in Philip Grubauer, and I would be extremely shocked if the Las Vegas Golden Knights, or pardon me, the Vegas Golden Knights.
Their name is dumb.
Their logo is terrible, too. It's not even a Knights helmet, but I digress. If they don't take Philip Grubauer, I don't know what they're doing there.
Well, let's hope they don't know what they're doing either. Because I would
it's him or Schmidt.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Nate Schmidt, who we haven't brought up, and I like him a lot. I mean, he definitely has to come back. The way he played in the playoffs, it showed that he's that new type of defenseman. He can skate very fast. He can move the puck effectively. There's nothing overly flashy about his game, but it's very efficient. And he can keep up with guys, right? So, but no, I still think it's Grubauer. I that would be the guy that I certainly would pick.
All right, so before we head over to our What the Puckies, I got to ask you, have you seen Goon 2 yet?
I haven't seen Goon 2.
No?
Which is surprising. I know, and I've actually heard like a lot of mixed reviews about it. Some of my friends hated it. Huh. I loved the first one. Some of my friends said, I can't believe you haven't seen it. It's dynamite. Obviously, if you've seen it, I mean, is it good?
Well, no, it's not released in the U.S. until September, so I was hoping you could give me a little like sneak preview or something. But if you haven't seen it, man, I don't know.
Well, I'm sure that I'll love it. I mean, the first one is, you know, our generation's Slapshot, which is pretty high praise because, I mean, you guys would know this from last time. Slapshot's my favorite movie of all time. I was raised on that, and. Yeah, no, I definitely got to check it out because it's, you know, Jay Baruchel's a Canadian gem. I like that guy a lot.
He was on TSN when the Shattenkirk deal went down, and they actually him, like, poetically say the terms of the Shattenkirk deal, which, I mean, the terms were just insane. But, you know, I felt better hearing it from Jay.
That was incredibly confusing.
Yeah, it was really funny too. You know, TSN. I feel lucky that I can watch them all the time. They're, in my opinion, the cream of the crop in terms of hockey broadcasting. Their product and the guys that they have delivering it are second to none. I think Ray Ferraro, for instance, the guy that they have is like he's basically their Pierre Maguire, the guy that's always between the glass. Ray Ferraro is just a spectacular hockey analyst. He's definitely a guy I look up to, and they always have those guys come in. Jay Baruchel, the guys from Letterkenny, you know, they're friends with everybody, man, and they always bring a good show on trade deadline day. It's always funny.
All right, so Coach Dan, let me ask you before we get going, do you have any more questions? Is there anything else we should cover before we hit our What the Puckies?
Well, while we've all been talking, I was on Cap Friendly, and I figured out a way to get all these guys back and still have $3 million and change in cap space.
Is that
you, wizard, eh?
Wow.
Yeah, with the $75 million cap space.
Okay, yeah.
So I've read it's going to go anywhere between 75 and 76, and I took your advice, Ryan, with going with Connor Hobbs, save us some money. But our third pairing defense would be Hobbs and Bowie, and that's a little scary.
Yeah, but you know what? Those guys, in terms of Madison Bowie anyway, he's been marinating for a long time in the AHL, and he's been getting pro-level coaching from Troy Mann, who I think, you know, should be in the top list of guys who are in line for a potential NHL head coaching job someday. Maybe if Barry Trotz doesn't get it done again and they move away from him, maybe they would hire internally and bring up Troy Mann. He's done a tremendous job with the Hershey Bears. They're always contending for the cup. I mean, they're always right there for the Calder. But Madison Bowie worries me less than Connor Hobbs, but based on what I've seen out of Connor Hobbs when he was playing in the WHL with the Regina Pats, I like the package he brings a lot. So, yeah, it'd be a little scary to break in a couple fresh faces, especially on the blue line. Defense, I think, is the hardest position in the NHL to get a grasp on for young players. But, I mean, the talent's there.
All right, here's what I got. Let me know what you guys think. We got Ovechkin, Backstrom, and Oshie on the first line. Oshie at $6 million.
Yep.
Which may end up costing them in the long run. Burakovsky, I'd give him $3 million. My thoughts on that is that Burakovsky gets the same deal that Kuznetsov is currently coming off of, which is about $3 million. So it's a bridge deal, getting him to his potential unrestricted years or the end of his restricted years, for them to then sign him to a long-term contract.
Yeah, the logic makes perfect sense to me.
You know, Burakovsky, Kuznetsov, and Johansson, not exactly the, you know, most feisty or physical line you'll see, but we did see more physicality from Johansson this past season.
Yeah, I liked his game a lot.
Third line, Vrana, Eller, Wilson. Fourth line, Walker, Beagle, Boyd.
Yeah, Travis Boyd, he's a guy that we haven't touched on either. Yeah, he's been a good soldier in the AHL, and I think that he deserves a look as well. You know, it'll all shake out at training camp with the young guys that we know are going to be part of the mix. Riley Barber, who I brought up earlier, he'll certainly warrant some looks. Maybe Nathan Walker. So, yeah, I mean, you know, that looks pretty good to me. It's going to be part of our reality pretty soon. I mean, there are going to be changes here.
It's gonna be interesting to see what they do next season. The defense almost is as scary a question mark as the bottom six next season. But I do think it helps potentially to have a different bottom six, and one that, while there may be a lot of questions, you know, it could have the opportunity to be even better.
It's a lot of questions, but it might also be the answer.
Oh God!
Yeah. Well, because think about those young guys as you know, philosopher Brandon here. I mean. Think about those young guys, right? Like, they haven't been part of these epic playoff collapses. A lot of them have been part of great playoff runs in the AHL or even in the CHL. Some of the guys, I mean, the Caps seem to love the Western Hockey League. That's made up half their draft picks over the past two drafts. So those guys haven't been a part of this. Like, a lot of them know winning. So maybe some of that youthful enthusiasm and not being familiar with this constant heartache that we've been dealing with, it might help them.
That's a good point. It's, if anything, it's just exciting to sort of to have. It's sort of like what we had many years ago after the fire sale, and you had all these young guys, and you're just waiting for them to come up to see what they can do. And now it looks like we may have that to some extent again, because they're going to have to promote young players.
You're right.
Or McClellan's going to have to get real creative.
Yeah.
It's going to be one or the other.
Yeah.
All right, everybody, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back, and we will have the end of the year awards. It's our special annual What the Puckies with special guest Ryan Drury this year. He's going to tell us his picks.
Hockey at its best.
Hockey at its best.
All right, welcome back to What the Puck. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you have your tux and your evening gown on. It's time for the annual What the Puckies. We're not in Vegas for the NHL Awards. We are in your car or at the gym or whatever. We bring the award show to you. So Ryan, Coach Dan, let's talk about it. Let's start off with the Rod Langway Defensive Player of the Year. Ryan, since you're the guest here, I'm going to let you kick it off. Who is your Rod Langway Defensive Player of the Year?
Well, I really appreciate you guys letting me take the lead here on your What the Puckies. It's one of my favorite features on the show. So, yeah, Defensive Player of the Year for me, it's got to be Matt Niskanen. I thought consistency-wise and in terms of how well he played in his own zone. And, I mean, I mentioned this earlier with Dmitry Orlov and how I think that the Caps need to bring him back as well. Last year, I said to you guys, and I've mentioned it to Dan numerous times in our Twitter exchanges, that I really didn't like the way that Orlov was playing. I thought he was taking too many risks and would be very erratic in the way he'd try and move the puck. Look what Matt Niskanen did for that kid. I mean, he really settled his game down and turned him into a much more reliable defensive partner. If they end up playing together again next year, who knows? But Matt Niskanen, 5 goals, 34 assists. He was plus 20. He was consistently the best defensive defenseman every single night. And hey, he chipped in a bit of offense here and there too. He's my Rod Langway Defensive Player of the Year by a mile.
Nicholas Backstrom, 2-on-1 with Ovechkin. Backstrom feeds. Ovechkin bumps it. Score! Beautiful timing for Matt Niskanen.
And it's an easy tally for Niskanen. The Capitals' defense so smart at joining rushes. I mean, the goaltender on the other side of the post, because he's playing Ovechkin all the way. He slides completely out of the net. It's a layup for Niski.
Great pick there. Great pick. Coach Dan, how about you? Defensive Player of the Year.
For this year, I'm going to give my award to Dmitry Orlov. I felt like this guy was in a career-breaking year, in that if things went poorly, he was going to be in for a lot of hurt, and we didn't know what was going to happen to him after the season, and he probably wouldn't be coming back. He had a fantastic year, 6 goals, 27 assists. He was a plus 30. Playoffs points-wise, could have been a little bit better, had 4 assists in 24 games played, but a lot of the defense was struggling in the playoffs in terms of point production. I felt like Orlov had a fantastic year, definitely is going to earn a new contract, and is one of those guys that you could see being a top-pairing defenseman for this Caps team for a number of years. So my award this year goes to Dmitry Orlov.
And it will be Colorado's Eric Johnson to clear. Duchene, upended by Orlov.
What a hip check. You rarely see them anymore. That might be the best one I've seen the last 10 seasons plus. What a hit.
All right, so that's two different ones. I'm going to come with a third different one. I'm going to give my Rod Langway Defensive Player of the Year to Nate Schmidt.
Nice.
I will be completely honest. I was not a big fan of his work at the beginning of this year. Coach Dan and I had plenty of shows when Shattenkirk came in and said, yeah, he was the seventh best guy. That's why he's sitting. But it wasn't the regular season that really impressed me. It was the way he came back in the playoffs. I love the fact that he had something to prove. He had, you know, he had he was just ticked off, and he wanted to prove people wrong, and he actually did it. He did a great job. I love seeing him work with Alex Ovechkin. As crazy as it is with that pairing, when the two of them are on the ice together and they can work out a pass or whatever, those guys are scoring. They are constantly working off of each other. So he's a great offensive defenseman, but my defensive player of the year, Nate Schmidt. So that's pretty cool. Three different guys. We can see this is why we do this. It's so cool.
Ovechkin has a chance to send in Schmidt. Schmidt for Ovechkin. Score!
All right, so now
that's a fair shout, eh? I mean, I like Nate Schmidt a lot. And, you know, the thing that about him that's so endearing is he did it all with a smile. I mean, obviously he wasn't happy to not be playing, but he had such a great attitude about it. And he came back really strong.
He's really goofy. He is goofy.
He kind of on the ice, he kind of reminds me of a less athletic Mike Green.
Yeah.
And that he gets down the ice pretty quickly. He doesn't quite have the same moves. He's not going to be able to stick handle the same way, but he will jump into the rush. And it's almost like he's just so excited. Like he gets to play. He's like a little kid or a little brother playing with his older brother's friends.
I like that analogy, but please never let Braden Holtby cut your hair again. That's the one thing Nate Schmidt's got to learn. All right, so since we had a defensive player of the year and that was our favorite player, let's try to balance it out with the bad. Let's talk about the Adam Oates biggest disappointment of the year. Coach Dan, biggest disappointment of the year.
Oh, all right. Hold on, I got to stretch out for this one. I'm going to yell that, I'm sure. All right, my biggest disappointment of the year is going to go to Andre Burakovsky.
Ooh.
35 points in the regular season. I expected more. Only 12 goals. Yes, some of it was a result of the line mates and the fact that Eller, not the most offensive-minded. Tom Wilson, kind of the same way. I had higher expectations of Burakovsky. I thought he was going to do significantly better and bring more scoring to the bottom six, and I just felt like he did not do that. Yes, some of it could have been the line he was on, and perhaps if he was playing more with the top-line guys throughout the season, his point production could have been better. Maybe that stunted his growth a little bit, but my biggest disappointment for last season was Andre Burakovsky.
Interesting. All right, Ryan, Adam Oates' biggest disappointment of the year. What you got?
Well, I like the way you're thinking, Dan, because that's exactly who I picked for my biggest disappointment.
Yeah.
And I, you know, when I was thinking about it, I mean, you ran it off the stats there, 12 goals, 23 assists in 64 games. Now, you know, that's a little better than half a point per game. But just in terms of his goal production in particular, I know he was injured for part of the year. But the thing that really disappointed me, and I mentioned to you guys last year that I thought Andre Burakovsky had to take a big step forward. He did toward the end of the season before the playoffs. That was when he was really hot. He had a great last 3 or 4 weeks. But the start of the year, he looked like he was skating in quicksand. I mean, he could not get it figured out. Yes, was he playing with less skilled line mates than a Nick Backstrom on a consistent basis? Yeah, sure. But the thing that I said about Andre Burakovsky last year was I wanted him to take more initiative and shoot the puck more. And too many times, he's got an incredible shot, probably one of the best on the team. And too many times this year, especially in those first 3 or 4 months, I saw him, you know, pass up opportunities to shoot the puck and take initiative on his line to be the best player, not rely so much on his line mates to help him, because he has the skill to be better than this. And that's why he's my disappointment as well.
All right. Well, I'm going to be breaking the mold here. The Adam Oates biggest disappointment of the year for me is Kevin Shattenkirk.
Yeah, that makes sense.
This guy came in. He was the big acquisition, the big trade line get. We did that. The Caps did that so that the Penguins, the Rangers couldn't make their team better. He was going to make our team better. However, he's throwing pucks over the glass, getting dumb penalties, not doing anything to really help this team out in the right way in the postseason. And it's weird that he came in and said he had this mental block about the Penguins since he came in so late. You think that really wouldn't affect him that much. And you think he'd be the guy kind of getting them out of that that mental block they have against the Penguins, going, look, I've never faced these guys before. I think we can take them out, yada, yada, yada. So Kevin Shattenkirk, I'm glad he's not coming back. At least I don't think he is. But he was my biggest disappointment of the year.
Shattenkirk launches excessively up and into this hit, with both skates well off the ice before contact is made. The Department of Player Safety has suspended Kevin Shattenkirk for 2 games.
Yeah, that's really fair.
That's fair.
I was thinking like more long-term full season, but I mean, in terms of just the definition of what the award is, biggest disappointment, he was a thunderous disappointment. Yeah, that's a really fair shout.
And, you know, the fact that he was brought in, he's a veteran, and I understand getting used to a new system. It takes a little bit of time, but when you are a veteran like that, you think that he'd be able to do it a little bit quicker than what he did.
Yep, you're right, yeah.
All right, so now let's go to the surprise of the year. I'm going to start this one off. The surprise of the year, signing Kevin Shattenkirk.
That was a pretty good one.
Because, honestly, think about it. It was going up to the trading deadline. Brian McClellan came out and was like, look, we're not going after anybody. We are happy with who we have. We don't need anything. And I think we all agreed we were happy with this team. And then at the last hour, boom, here he is, Kevin Shattenkirk. You're now in a red jersey. Congratulations. You're a part of the Caps team. And I wasn't expecting any of that. And the only good thing I feel coming out of that is the fact that we got Phoenix Copley back to back up Braden Holtby next year if Grubauer goes away.
I got the phone call from my GM in St. Louis, and then Brian McClellan gave me a call, and that's when it's really official. So that happened at about 10:30 at night, and then I was on a flight at 8:30 the next morning to New York City with as much stuff as I could pack into a bag and playing that night.
So that's my surprise of the year, signing Kevin Shattenkirk. Ryan, surprise of the year. What event or person do you have?
I went for a person, I guess. Dmitry Orlov for me was the biggest surprise, simply because of what I mentioned before in pairing him with Matt Niskanen. He could be very erratic. He could excite you and frustrate you all in the same shift last year. He still had flashes of that in his game at the start of this season, but when he started consistently playing with Matt Niskanen, and Niskanen really, you know, reined him in and said, look, if you pick your spots a little more on when to try that stretch fast or when to try that, you know, that puck rush from the red line, you know, if you rein that in a little bit and pick your spots a little more, you could really, really improve. I mean, 6 goals, 27 assists. He was plus 30. I mean, he was very good. He was dynamic. I think back to, you know, some of the changes he made to his game, just little things where he would pick his spots to be a little more physical. He'd go for those big hits. I mean, he screwed up Matt Duchene's weekend that one game. I mean, he flipped him over like a pancake. That was incredible. I mean, just little things like that in his game weren't there at all last year. And I think he took a big stride forward, kind of the opposite of what Burakovsky did. I thought Orlov was very surprising. He was really good.
It's Eller dropping it back for Niskanen. Lines and fakes. Clapper scores! Dmitry Orlov, and it's tied.
All right, Coach Dan, you're up. Surprise of the year.
My biggest surprise of the year is Marcus Johansson. I did not have a high opinion of this guy going into this season. I did not think that he was going to be all that big of a player. He ended up getting 58 points, 24 goals, 34 assists, got significantly more physical than we've seen of him in the past. I thought the play we got from him this last season was phenomenal. I think if they can get him on solid line with him and Kuznetsov, and if it's Burakovsky or Vrana maybe or somebody next season, then I think that he's going to be a very dangerous player for this team going forward. My biggest surprise for me was Marcus Johansson.
Carlson connects to Williams. Williams is slapper, deflected, rebound, score! Marcus Johansson pushes the Caps through to round two.
Runner-up surprise of the year for me is holding Caps Fan Fest on a Wednesday in D.C., but other than that... That is
all right, settle down.
Sorry, still mad. All right, next up, the Jaromír Jágr biggest waste of cap space. Coach Dan, biggest waste of cap space. Is it going to be a two for 2 years in a row?
I don't remember who I said last season, but my guess is it's probably the same one. My award goes to Brooks Orpik.
Oh, I didn't see that coming.
I know. While he may bring all the veteran intangibles, and I've read great things about him on Twitter and articles and things where they've said where he does all the things a veteran will do, and he's great for the younger players, at $5.5 million a year of a cap hit, I'm going to need a lot more from you than we're getting at this point. Yes, great plus minus. Terrible in the playoffs. He's slow. He's significantly older. He's taking up cap space. It's time to move him out. He's my biggest waste of cap space.
It's hard to argue with that. It really is. All right, Ryan, Jaromír Jágr, biggest waste of cap space. Who you got?
Can I just say really quick that I almost find it kind of hilarious that you guys have named this award after Jaromír Jágr? I know that people hate him in Washington, and I understand. But I mean, when you look at, you know, the team that was around him, he was a big reason why I became a Caps fan. When you look at the team that was around him and the point totals he did put up, I mean, was it disappointing based on expectations? Sure, but he was an okay, if not semi solid player for the Caps. He just showed that he didn't want to be here very much. I think that if he had arrived at a time like now, he would be great, but I mean, you know, I digress. My biggest waste of cap space, it can't be anybody but Brooks Orpik. I mean, and I won't wax poetic about the reasons why. Dan and I earlier in the show covered it. Dan, you touched all the points there. It can't be anybody but Brooks Orpik. Sorry.
You know, it's very true, and I figured that's what you guys were going to pick. So again, I tried to think a little differently. It didn't take up a lot of cap space, but I just got to say, Brett Connolly, the guy did not cost a lot. He was brought in, and it wasn't really sure if he was even going to play that much, but throughout the regular season, he looked great, looked like he was going to, you know, be a great weapon, and then he disappears in the postseason, so much so that he got scratched, and the Caps went with seven defensemen, so he wasn't even playing for the money he was making. So just to be a little different, I went with Brett Connolly as the biggest waste of cap space.
Yeah, certainly in the playoffs, he kind of fell off, but I'll just disagree just in terms of what he did in the regular season. I was actually fairly surprised, and I almost made him my surprise player just because I didn't see Brett Connolly scoring 15 goals or even playing over 50 games. I mean, he, for a sixth overall pick back in, I believe, in 2010 to the Tampa Bay Lightning, he's had a very disappointing development curve. But, yeah, no, that's a fair shout. I mean, he was a complete non-factor in the playoffs. So if you want to factor that in, yeah, he wasn't very good.
Yeah, if we're talking regular season, I definitely would not have him down as the biggest waste of cap space. But for me, you got to be on the ice in the postseason if you're going to be making that money. So he was brought in to make the bottom six better, and he flat out didn't. So, sucks, but that's my pick. But if it was just strictly money, yeah, we might be renaming that the Brooks Orpik biggest waste of cap space next year. We'll see.
But and the funnier part about it is the fact that there was no really concerns about salary cap during Jágr's years.
Yeah.
It was just funny.
All right, next up we will be going with the Skipjack prospect of the year. So who leads it off? Is it my turn to lead it off?
I forgot.
Yep. All right,
I was correct.
All right, so I'm going to go with Hershey Bear Travis Boyd. Had a great regular season with the Hershey Bears. He led the Bears in scoring, 16 goals, 47 assists. Dude was an AHL All-Star, and he also got called up to the Capitals. So I had to go with Travis Boyd. I think he plays center right now for the Bears, so I don't know how much of a future he will have, maybe after Lars Eller leaves, or if he can transition over to a wing to come up to the big leagues. But for right now, Skipjack Prospect of the Year, Travis Boyd.
I like it. Yeah, I think he's a good player, and yeah, he typically plays center, and yeah, if Eller leaves, or, you know, if a guy like Beagle gets injured for a long period of time, he'd be a guy that could potentially slot right in there.
All right, Coach Dan, Skipjack Prospect of the Year. Who you got?
See, I feel like this would have been one where Jakub Vrána would have been the easy pick, but he struggled when he came back from D.C., going back up to Hershey. So I agree with you. I have to give it to Travis Boyd. I think it looks like he had a fantastic year. He led the Bears in points, and I do think he's going to get a legitimate look next season, at least in training camp, to make the roster. And like you said, it's going to be tough in the center spot, but maybe you find him on the wing on the fourth line and then go from there.
Bears got out for the
All right, next up, Ryan, Skipjack Prospect of the Year. Who you got?
Yeah, this is where I go off the board and get weird a little bit. I remember talking with Brandon last night and him kind of going, oh, really, that guy? Because, I mean, he's technically not even really playing over here. We've yet to sign him to a contract even. My prospect of the year is Ilya Samsonov, the young Russian goaltender. He came over for development camp for the first time since we drafted him in the first round of 2015. And he managed to come over and spend 3 weeks here. And then when he went back to the KHL to play for Metallurg Magnitogorsk, and if that team sounds familiar, it should. That's where Evgeny Malkin made a name for himself in Russia, among a number of other good Russian players. When he went back to the KHL, he had two shutouts this year. Both of them were in his first three games back. So he hit the ground running when he went back to the KHL. And I know that league gets a lot of knocks, but in terms of pure skill, it might be the second best pro league in the world. There is good hockey to be had over there. There's also really bad hockey to be had. There's a team in China, for God's sake, which interestingly enough is being coached by Mike Keenan. How far the mighty have fallen. I digress. Ilya Samsonov, 27 games played, 15-3-5 record, a 2-1-3 goals against, and a .936 save percentage with those two shutouts. When you look at a 20-year-old kid in a really good league, that's pretty darn impressive. I was really happy with him. And if people listen to my show, Hockey Talk, I've mentioned him numerous times. I think the world of Ilya Samsonov, I think that he's the best goaltender not playing in the NHL.
Dallin works in. Jonathan Dallin steps around Zadorov, sends it back. Oh, what a stop there by Samsonov in tight on Anderson. And Samsonov is again slow to get to his feet, but what a save that was.
Wow, so that's interesting. Last year I had Vitek Vanacek from the ECHL. You got him from the KHL. I got to say, I'm so impressed that you knew how to say that team's name. That was amazing.
I got that too, and I was like, oh, that's how you say it.
I watch quite a bit of KHL hockey. Oh, yeah. I actually like it quite a bit. And I'm okay with my Russian pronunciations.
And let me just say, it's interesting you're saying that he's one of the better guys that's not playing in the NHL, because if I'm not mistaken, after their playoffs ended, he kind of did a social media stance on the KHL talking about how teams were buying their cup and that they were the teams were getting picked and getting favored, and there was like bribery and stuff going on in the league. So I'm a little interested to see if he comes over next year. Maybe we see him in South Carolina or Hershey.
Yeah, there's potential. I mean, the only issue with that, though, is I believe he still has 1 year after this remaining his KHL contract. And the NHL and the KHL basically, you know, had this agreement where, hey, you don't touch our guy with term, we don't touch your guy. That's why Kuznetsov took so long to get here. Mm-hmm. He did do that. You're absolutely right, Brandon. I remember reading that on Russian Machine when they got the translation from over in Russia. And, I mean, he's not exactly wrong. I mean, I don't mean to be rude here. We all love Ovechkin and Kuznetsov, but I mean, this is Russia we're talking about. It's not exactly known for being a land of fairness and widespread prosperity, if you will. There are a few people who are very well off, and the vast majority of the country isn't. I read an article yesterday that the KHL is folding one of its teams. I believe Novokuznetsk is folding, and another one of their teams is leaving for the Austrian League. This a year after they absorbed a team from Finland and a couple from the Croatian League. So, like, the KHL seems to keep wanting to expand. I mean, like, they're in China. It's ridiculous. There's 20 people at the rink, and I'm not kidding. There's maybe 20 people, and half of them are arena staff. It's incredible. And interestingly enough, last night on my show, we had player agent Dan Milstein, who is from the Ukraine, his first client was Pavel Datsyuk. And he now represents guys like Nikita Kucherov, Artemi Panarin. He helped bring him to the NHL, Nikita Zaitsev. And we asked him about this, and he said, you know, it's very interesting. The problem with the KHL, when you compare it to the NHL is a business, and it's run like a business. The KHL is a hobby. A lot of these owners, they don't make money. They make very, very little. Dynamo Moscow, the team that Ovechkin came out of, Dan was basically saying they're lucky if they gross $1 million in ticket revenue.
Wow.
Because the travel is so expensive. If you don't have a team sponsor like Dynamo has in Gazprom, you're in trouble. I mean, there are at least seven teams in the KHL right now that can't afford to pay their players. They're 6 months behind in salary payments, adding up to almost $17 million US. It's disgusting. It's not run like a proper business. And the teams that are successful, like CSKA Moscow, where Datsyuk plays now, St. Petersburg, which infamously signed Ilya Kovalchuk, you know, there are like two or three teams in this league that make a bit of money, and two or three teams in the league that can throw money around and sign those players. So, I mean, is Samsonov wrong in that assessment? Not really.
All right, last question before we move on about Samsonov, because I don't know a lot about him. We don't get to watch a lot of KHL here in the U.S., but with the current standings for the Olympics, you know, it looks like the NHL will not participate, but, you know, anything can change. Do you see him being one of the leaders to be the goaltender for Team Russia?
Yeah, I do, simply because he still has that remaining term on his contract. So I think that if, you know, there aren't going to be any NHL Russian goaltenders, I mean, assuming that the NHL doesn't go, if they were going, you would assume that Sergei Bobrovsky would be sure. The odds-on starter. He's an incredible goaltender. But in terms of if the NHL is actually dead set on not going, yeah, I think they'd be foolish not to turn to Samsonov. He's a dynamite goaltender. And I mean, if you want evidence of some of the work he's done, go on YouTube and look up World Juniors highlights when he was in the crease for Russia. I mean, in some of the games that they lost, the score could have been 15-0, and he was just making incredible saves. I think the world of the kid. I like him a lot.
All right, very cool. We're going to keep moving along with our What the Puckies now. Now we're going to go to the holy jumping goal of the year. Ryan, we'll start you off. What goal is your holy jumping goal of the year?
I mean, in terms of, like, you know, being a highlight reel goal, I mean, you know, maybe it doesn't stick out, but just for the significance of it and how vintage it was, I mean, Alex Ovechkin's 1,000th point, where he came in off his off wing, toe-dragged Trevor Daley and just shelved it over Marc-Andre Fleury. And who better to score his 1,000th point on than a Pittsburgh Penguin goalie? Just the significance of it, 1,000 points, fastest Russian player ever to 1,000 in 880 games. He bests his buddy Sergei Fedorov. Just the weight of that moment and how significant it was and how excited I'm sure we all were. I know I was doing double backflips when he scored that. I was so excited for him. Yeah, that'll be my goal of the year. It was an incredible moment.
Daley again, but that intercepted by Oshie. Played back ahead of Backstrom. Ahead now to Ovechkin. Cruising on in. Toe drag. Score! 1,000 points!
Absolutely. You can't go wrong with an Ovi goal ever. So, Coach Dan, holy jumping goal of the year. What do you got?
No, I know I didn't have one before.
Oh.
Because there really wasn't that exciting of a goal throughout the rest of the season. So, like, I was thinking about it, and I was thinking, what would be a really cool goal of the year, a good one to have? There was nothing, like, was it Fair 2 years ago where he was, like, falling down and roofed it over to a goalie? Was it Rask? Yes. Or the one last year where Orlov was the only one who knew where the puck was. That was pretty funny. Yeah. I'm going to give mine to Jakub Vrána, his first goal in the NHL. I thought it was a really cool moment for the kid. It was not an exciting goal, not a very interesting goal. I was going back and I was watching it just a few moments ago on YouTube. Nothing real exciting to see, but just I thought it was a nice moment for the kid.
That is a great pick. I did not see that coming. That's a solid pick right there, Coach.
I surprised you.
You did.
Smoothly down the wing, it's Kuznetsov. Darting to the front, a beat, score! Jakub Vrána! With a tap-in for his first in the NHL.
All right, my pick for the holy jumping goal of the year goes to TJ Oshie in early January up against Ottawa. Why that goal? Because that was Nick Backstrom's 500th assist. Again, all three of us have something in common. No fancy goals, nothing that would really be a highlight reel goal, but important in their own right.
So it's in there for a score! A hard shot by Oshie. And Condon didn't get a chance to move on that bullet. It was on his glove side, all right. But a hard shot up high, 1-0 Washington.
What a bullet, as Backstrom is going to draw an assist on that, and that is going to be his 500th. That is a franchise first for the Washington Capitals.
Yeah, and that's a great one, too. I mean, the significance of the moment. The only other one I was considering that was really nice that stuck out was another Oshie goal. Do you remember a game, I believe it was in February against Boston, where Backstrom hit him on a breakaway from about 50 feet away, and Oshie went in alone on Rask and roofed it backhand. That was a really nice goal, too. But all of our goals are kind of cool. You know, it was a significant moment. And, yeah, that was a great goal.
All right, it's the big one. It's the best picture of the year. It's the what is it? Best drama, best comedy? I don't know, for the Emmys. But anyway, the Peter Bondra MVP of the Capitals. Coach Dan, I'm throwing to you. Who is your MVP of the year?
I gotta go first.
Yeah, you do.
All right, my Peter Bondra MVP is going to go to Nicholas Backstrom. Led the team in points, definitely a leader on this team. He's a fantastic hockey player. He is one of the big reasons that Ovechkin has the point totals that he has, aside from the fact that Ovechkin is just a phenomenal goal scorer. But Backstrom is right there with him in terms of being an outstanding player, and he's not flashy. He's not going to go out and try and hog the spotlight. So he, for this past season, was the Capitals' best player. He is my Peter Bondra MVP.
You know what? I'm going to piggyback right onto yours. The Peter Bondra MVP, Nick Backstrom for me as well. Everything that you just said, he has definitely become more and more of a leader on this team. He has become he's a staple of this team. Like you said, he's a part of the core, and he gets overlooked a whole lot by the NHL, and there's no reason for it. He's fantastic. He's got fantastic numbers. He's solid on this team, so... a two-time MVP in the same year, Nick Backstrom. Ryan, who is your Peter Bondra MVP of the year?
Well, let me make it, you know, our first perfect trifecta here.
Being
that Nicholas Backstrom's a Swede, it's a Trey Cronor, if you will. Nicholas Backstrom, I mean, I can't say enough about this guy. You guys probably know this, you know, from following me on Twitter, and all my friends know Nicholas Backstrom is, by a landslide, my favorite player in the National Hockey League. I love the way he conducts his business. He quietly goes about the efficient way that he slays teams with his passing. And hey, he's a pretty darn good goal scorer too when he decides to shoot the puck. I actually feel like if Nick Backstrom shot the puck more, he could get 100 points, no problem. He gets 86 this year, another 60 assist season. If I'm not mistaken, he's the only player in the NHL over the last four seasons to have 460 assist years in the past number of years. I mean, in terms of setup men, he's the elite guy that I look to. Excellent on the power play, working the half wall. The entire Caps power play for years now runs through him. And I mean, Brandon, you talked about the leadership and the way that he started to step up. In my opinion, going back to our earlier talk about the Capitals' mental issues and you know, who it all falls on, I actually think that it would do Alex Ovechkin and the Capitals as a whole a great service if they made Nicholas Backstrom the captain of this hockey team. As far as I'm concerned, no matter who's wearing the C, if it's still Ovechkin, as far as I'm concerned, Nicholas Backstrom is the captain of this hockey team. He is undoubtedly, over the last two seasons for sure, the best player on the team. And you could actually argue he's been the most influential player on the team for the better part of 5 years. Everything that he brings to the ice is incredible, and he does it in such a classy, non-flashy way. You mentioned how, you know, he gets disrespected a lot by the National Hockey League. One all-star game for Nicholas Backstrom. It's utterly gross. The NHL, with this stupid setup they have at the all-star game where every team's got to have a player because we don't want to make these guys feel bad. It's ridiculous. If that wasn't the setup, Nicklas Backstrom would be at the All-Star game every single year. I love the guy. I think that he's leadership material. I was stoked when he won a gold medal with Sweden just a week ago. And yeah, he's my MVP of the Capitals by a landslide.
Hey, Nicky, congrats with 500 assists. Everybody knows you're good, but I'm pretty sure I know more than everybody how good you are.
Backstrom works in. Wade scores.
All right. Wow. The first time we've had three people, the first trifecta of the awards. That is awesome on MVP. Congratulations, Nick Backstrom. Wow.
I'm sure he's very excited.
He's listening right now with his earbuds in Sweden, and he's like, this gold medal's really cool, but I just got three What the Puckies. That's the stamp of approval I need. All right, Ryan, it's about time to let you go, man. So before you you head out, let people know where to check out Hockey Talk with Ryan Drury and all the other things you're involved with.
Yeah, Hockey Talk. You can podcast us on iTunes and find us on Podomatic. Hockey Talk with Ryan Drury on 91.3 FM Blue Water Radio here in beautiful Ontario. We're also on East Link here in Ontario. You won't get that in the States, but I know they post some of the videos of us on their website. I also work on the Rogers broadcast of Guelph Storm Hockey. So obviously we're in the off season right now, so I won't be back until September. And then, I'm also working full time for a news radio station here, CKNX News, one of the oldest radio stations in Canada. It's actually one of the oldest radio stations in North America.
Oh, wow.
So I'm a news anchor for them, and I do sports as well on Junior B games. You can stream us online at cknx.ca. We cover the Listowel Cyclones Junior B team. And that'll be happening in September as well. So yeah, in the summer I'm a little less busy, but I've got my hands in a lot of cookie jars. So it's been good.
Sounds good. And like we started the whole night off with, you can be an angry guy on Twitter, but people calm you down and have good conversations with you. Where can they follow you on Twitter?
My Twitter handle is at @r_Drury. That's D-R-U-R-Y, like Chris, 08. So follow at your own peril, I guess. I have my opinions, and I stick by them. I can get a little heated when I'm watching the Capitals, but generally I try and be measured when I'm talking about other things. And you can follow the Hockey Talk show as well, at Hockey Talk 913.
Awesome. So, Ryan, again, thank you so much for hanging out with us. This has been a long show, and it's been awesome, dude. This has really been a lot of great. Your show is called Hockey Talk. You do it very well, talking to two schmucks like us. So, thank you so much for coming on.
Gentlemen, it's always a pleasure. You do yourself a disservice, Brandon. You guys have a great show. I listen to it religiously. You guys are kind of, you know, the voice of Caps Nation, in my opinion.
And, yeah.
I really enjoy listening, and I know other Caps fans, if they're not listening to the show, what the heck are you doing? Get on board. You guys do a great job, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you guys.
Hey, thank you so much, Ryan.
Thank you.
So we're going to take a quick break, and we will be back with Down on the Farm. But that's it for Caps World and What the Puckies. So stay tuned. We'll be right back again. Thanks a lot, Ryan.
What the Puck? What the Puck?
He's a member of the Baltimore Sports Report Network.
Find more podcasts like this at BaltimoreSportsReport.com.
This is Barry Trotz. You're listening to What the Puck.
All right, everybody, we are going down on the farm. We are talking Hershey Bears and South Carolina Stingrays. Once again, thank you to Ryan Drury. Check out his podcast, Hockey Talk with Ryan Drury. You can check that out on any podcast app that you listen to us on. So definitely check them out. So, Coach Dan, what is going on down on the farm?
Well, up in Hershey, their season came to an unfortunate end as they lost to Providence 4-3 in the Atlantic Division Finals last Wednesday. So the Hershey Bears got knocked out.
No.
South Carolina, on the other hand, they're on to the Kelly Cup Finals.
Yeah.
They ousted Manchester in Game 7. They'll be taking on Colorado to hoist the Cup. Games 1 and 2 are in Colorado starting on Friday, then this Sunday on the 28th. Then they go to the North Charleston Coliseum for Games 3 through 5 starting on Sunday, June 4th, with Game 4 on Monday, and Game 5 that following Wednesday. Game 6 and 7 are back in Colorado, and that's Games 5, 6, and 7, again, if they are necessary. That's what's going on down on the farm.
All right. South Carolina, you are keeping our cup dreams alive with the Kelly Cup. This is like the Reading Royals a couple years ago during the lockout. So do what you got to do, South Carolina. Let's get it
done.
Those
are fun shows.
They were some of my favorites, to be honest.
Nope. All right. Talk to you next week.
What do you think about wearing a hockey jersey when they're not playing? Oh, man. Remember our fashion fashion shows is what we were doing. They were sad.
Those are rough.
Hey, did you check out that Dynamo Moscow game that was on ESPN2? Yeah, that was weird. All right. Well, that's it for Down on the Farm. Go Stingrays. Do what you got to do. We're not going to go around the NHL because there's only so much going on, but we are going to give you a quick Stanley Cup update because you're probably going to know more than what we're going to know at this point. But hey, whatever. So here we go. Stanley Cup, what's going on?
Well, basically, the biggest thing is that the Nashville Predators are on to their first Stanley Cup finals. Yeah, Forsberg.
All right, Smashville.
Oh my God! He got to the finals before Ovechkin, and it's nothing against him. It's George McPhee, you bastard. Nashville moving on to the Stanley Cup Finals after they ousted Anaheim. Right now, it's Pittsburgh versus Ottawa to see who gets to go down to Nashville. I don't even know where it starts, but I believe this Cup Finals start on Monday. I have that right, I believe. So, yeah, Brent, crazy times. But yeah, that's pretty much it. Not a lot of news in the NHL right now.
Let me just tell you, for my bracket, I had Nashville losing in the first round.
Good job, man.
Yep. Good old Chicago. You know, I had them going. Technically, though, I had them going all the way. So, really, I still lost.
Yeah, I don't know where you're going with that one, but no.
No, I can't do anything. All right. Well, that's pretty much it for the show this week. If you want to continue the conversation with Coach Dan or I, you can. It's real easy. All you have to do is tweet to either one of us. You can tweet to me at Brando Cash. Coach Dan, where can people tweet to you at?
You can find me on Twitter at WTP Coach. And Brandon, you can also find a new thing that I have written
on
the internet over at Capitals Outsider. Had a piece come out on the 23rd about the Caps, obviously, and where they go from here, what's going to happen, sort of all the interesting things that we were sort of talking about earlier with Mr. Ryan Drury. So, yeah, you can find that over at CapitalsOutsider.com. But, Brandon, why don't you go ahead and tell us about Brando Cash Entertainment?
That's right. Go to BrandoCash.com. Get all the information you're ever going to need about What the Puck and Brando Cash Entertainment. Go over to our Facebook page, Facebook.com/WTP Podcast, and follow us on the Twitter at What the Puck Pod. Whenever a new show comes out, you'll be the first to know. As I said last show, our shows will get a little bit more sporadic at this point. Those Caps key dates, you'll probably hear a show around then. But who knows, a day, maybe 2 days after that happens, you'll get a new show. So make sure you like and follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and then you'll know when a new show comes out. Or you could subscribe on iTunes. You could write us an iTunes review. I know. And a show will be automatically downloaded to your iPhone device, your iPad, whatever. Whenever a new show comes out, it'll just show up right there. It'll be a nice little present. You'll be like, oh, my God, they really do. They care. They remembered. They remember to do a show. And that could be a cool thing for you to do. So we do this show for free. You listen, stream, and download for free on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, the Baltimore Sports Report Network, Player.fm, Overcast, Google Play Music, and Satchel. All we ask in return is for you to please write an iTunes review. Let people know about the show. Be social with the show. Let people know on Facebook and Twitter and Tumblr and Pinterest and Instagram and Reddit and Snapchat. Go on social media and say, I'm a Washington Capitals fan. Yes, it's the offseason, but I'm still listening to What the Puck. They're picking up the pieces, helping us figure out what went wrong. You should listen, too. So that's pretty much it for the show this week. Again, thank you, Ryan Drury. Hockey Talk with Ryan Drury. Yeah. You can follow him on Twitter. He's at r_Drury. I think it's DRURY08. Make sure you give him a follow. Tell him that you started following him because of us. That would be really great. all right, so that's it for the show this week. Thank you all so much for listening throughout the season. This is kind of like our season finale until something big happens in Caps world. So we'll be back in a couple weeks. But until then, actually, you know what? Before I sign off, I do want to say this weekend is Memorial Day weekend. Thank you to everyone that has served in the military out there. That's a big holiday here in the U.S. So if you've ever been a part of the military, have a family member a part of the military, thank you for your service. Thank them for their service. It really does mean a lot for the U.S. to have people that are willing to serve their country in that way. So thank you all very much. But anyway, until we speak again, Coach Dan, it's been fun. Everybody.
Yeah, buddy.
Say it loud, say it proud. Let's go, Caps.
This has been a production of Brando Cash Entertainment. Music by DJ Wolfman. Voiceover by Sarah Jacks. For more information, go to brandocash.com.